Liz Truss has even crashed the pork market. Now that is a disgrace.
Hello and welcome to The Trawl, the show where we scroll through Twitter so you don't have to. I'm Marina Perkis.
And I'm Gemma Forte, and today's Trawl will inevitably be focusing on the fallout of the not-so-mini mini-budget. And we thought it might be interesting as well to have a real gander at the impact it's going to specifically have on mortgages and therefore renters too, and basically anybody who lives in a dwelling.
I've been glued to Twitter. It's been fascinating just observing the reactions to the budget. It's like we heard different versions of the budget. We've got people who are in shock and fear, quite rightly, denial and delusion, and even some have got, you know, well, a very few, pure delight. I mean, well, I say pure delight. I've actually got a member of my extended family, and at first glance, when he saw or heard about the mini budget, you know, he was quite chuffed, because he just thought, well, it's going to benefit me. And funnily enough, he's the only one in the family, or rather not the only one, but certainly the wealthiest and the highest earner of us all. So says it all, really. And worth noting, I do love this person dearly, but I just don't think he's aware of the wider consequences yet, or he wasn't, beyond his personal impact, which is going to be around, what, 7-8 grand going back in his back pocket every year, which he categorically does not need, unless of course you count turning one of his spare bedrooms into a cinema room and need. But good for him, I guess. But it just feels so wrong, like when you contrast it with where government help won't be directed. Instead, we've got, like, was it 14.5 million people living in poverty in the UK, with that's like 800,000 children living in poverty. In fact, I was unpacking my Tesco shop the other day, and have you noticed this on your beans? By the way, I get Heinz baked beans. I have tried the others. They just don't taste the same. And they've got this thing on the front of their beans now. It just says beans for every child. And they're in partnership. It's a partnership between Heinz and Magic Breakfast. And Heinz are basically providing beans for the 1 in 8 children at risk of starting the day hungry in the UK.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it? I would rather, sorry to your relly, but I would rather kids got their school lunches paid for than he got a cinema room. And I imagine,
and I think he would too.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. And actually, I was sort of speaking to someone the other day who works in the city, sort of a mate of a mate. You know, he earns a lot of money and he's just horrified by what's happening. And on every level, because not just what's been done to Britain as a whole, but also he's like, oh, I don't want the tax cut. And actually, she's absolutely bugger my pension. And, you know, people who are on that kind of money are going to still have concerns with mortgages and all the rest of it. Anyway, the point is, what has happened? Well, pretty much she's come in, she's done a couple of days hard graft and wiped $500 billion off the economy. I mean, wowzers, you know? I mean, if I make a small mistake at work, I'm like cringing. She's seems to have taken it in her stride. And Patrick Wintour, who's from The Guardian, he said, spare a thought for the new trade secretary, who's Kemi Badenoch. She was one of the people who were up for being PM. She's on board the HMS Queen Elizabeth in New York Harbour as she delivers a keynote speech today, telling an audience of US investors why the UK is the best place in the world to invest. And I tell you what, the timing is off, because Britain always has been a very good place to put your money. And I'm not saying it isn't now or it never will be, but actually, no, I'm going to change that right now. The whole point is the debt that we've now accrued, they're all trying to get rid of it, cast it off, and nobody wants it, which is why the Bank of England have had to buy it back. So, yeah. And you know what's really interesting, Marina? If you've got a couple of quid, or you come across as somebody who's doing well, and you quite rightly criticise the you know, people on the highest earnings getting all these, you know, tax breaks and sort of bankers being able to have off-the-scale bonuses unlimited, you get accused of being a champagne socialist, right? So you're too well off to give a stuff about normal, ordinary people or people who are really badly off. And if people go, no, actually she hasn't got that much, then it's politics of envy, apparently.
Yeah.
And I want to say, listener, do not let people gaslight you with this rubbish, because I've had to face this at work and it is absolute crap. And this tweet by Charlotte Benton, I really thought was funny. Well, no, is it funny? It's just good. At C_J Benton, she said, right-wing politics is the art of explaining why £10,000 a month isn't really that much, while £100 a month is more than enough. Doesn't that get to the crux of it, Marina?
Oh, that's very good. I like that one.
Yeah. So, you know, let's cut to a couple of days ago. They landed this bomb, this explosion, this unlooked-at budget, and then disappeared. Trust just couldn't be found anywhere. I tweeted, is she in a fridge? Because that's, I don't know if you know or not, Boris Johnson, when he wanted to escape some questioning on GMB, he hid in a fridge. True story. Had some great replies. Luke at Angry Lib Voice suggested, I think she's probably camped outside the Vogue offices again to do her daily begging for a photo shoot. So Comrade Gripsy then said, Liz Truss seems more like the kind of person who'd think putting a lampshade on her head would make her invisible. And you know what? All bets are off now. All bets are off after she's done this to us. I really think people are quite, you know, before she became Prime Minister, people were like, oh, give her a chance. No, she's had a chance. She's stuffed.
I mean, she's had, what, 23, 24 days of a chance? And look what she's done with it. In fact, it's almost impressive how much destruction.
500 billion worse off. I'm happy when I find 20 quid in my jeans that I put in the wash by mistake. She's lost 500 billion.
But it's almost like, can you imagine someone said to you, if you're going to be like, here's a task, right? What would you do if you have 22 days and you want to wipe 500 billion off the UK economy? What would you do? Go! And she's just smashed it. She's absolutely nailed
it. She has. Like,
it's brilliant.
Broken some kind of record.
Yeah, but she did actually come out of the fridge or whatever, wherever she was hiding, and she broke the silence, didn't she? She did.
She did. She did.
BBC local interviews.
I wish I'd written down. I spotted another tweet, and there's just been so much gold. There was another woman, and she said something like, Liz Truss strikes me as the kind of woman that when she's feeling sort of guilty and ashamed, she'd give the kitchen cupboards a right good deep clean.
Oh, see, I don't think she would. I can't see her as being that. She's not that useful. But anyway, yeah. She did break the silence. And Angela Rayner referenced this beautifully. She said, she broke her long, painful silence with a series of short, painful silences. And they were, so basically, right, so what happened is she's finally agreed to talk. And I found it a little bit strange when I first heard what she was doing. So she wasn't going to talk to any of like the big sort of platforms. She decided she was going to do a series of small BBC local radios, like regional radio stations. And I'll be honest, initially I was like, well, that's not sure about that. It feels like a bit of a cop out. She's doing these tiny little slots. Like, how much into the actual meat of it is she going to get? You know, is she going to get an easy ride? But actually, oh, I was very happy to be proved very wrong. In fact, Dino Sophos tweeted about this. He said, sad to see lots of snobby tweets about local radio. These presenters are some of the best in the business and have a closer and better understanding of their listeners' lives than any network presenter. And these interviews are often the toughest for politicians. And he was bang on.
Dino was 100% right. And it's a beautiful thing to see. I think we've mentioned before, you and I are a big fan of doing some prep. And I think, and I'm not saying this because I tell you what, some of the big names did great work today as well across the board. But, you know, imagine being on a local radio station and you get given the Prime Minister. Like, that doesn't happen. These guys, they've genned up. They've sat there doing what we do, like burning the midnight oil, making notes. Because, you know, this could make your career. So, yeah, I was also pleased. And then I didn't get a chance to listen to the interviews live. I don't know if you did, because I was... No. Faffing about doing other things this morning. So I went to go and have a look on Twitter and looked specifically at Dino Sophos's thing. And I was delighted. He'd put a series of clips displaying how Truss had her pants pulled down by some very good interviewers. So first up, here's some snippets for you in case you didn't get to hear them. This is Rima Ahmed from BBC Leeds.
I am really glad that you are here as well, because since Friday, since your Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng's mini-budget, the pound has dropped to a record low, the IMF has said that you should reevaluate your policies, and the Bank of England has had to spend £65 billion to prop up the markets because of what they describe as a material risk. Where have you been?
Well, I think we've got to remember.
Oh, where have you been? Great intro there from Rima. And do you know what I liked as well? So on Radio Leeds, She was asked if she'd slept well. She responded, I have. And then she was asked where she's been for the last 4 days. And her answer was, well, I'm here on Radio Leeds talking to you. It doesn't answer the question where you've been for the last 4 days, you dickhead.
Going back to what you were saying, like, you don't think she would have been, like, in shame, sort of scrubbing out cupboards. I actually agree with you. This woman is so dangerous precisely because she's so convinced in her rightness when it's so wrong. But what I would give anything to know what she's been doing and to be a fly on the wall, like coming out to her people and them going, do you think that went well? What are the papers saying? The Telegraph's very positive. Right. What about the rest of them? You can look at them later. Unreal. So then she went to BBC. Well, she didn't went to. She was doing it all remote, obviously. She popped onto BBC Lancashire. Now, I loved this as well. They all did such good work. So this was a presenter called Graham Liver. Now, for context, Lancashire is where they used to have fracking, right? And isn't that where they had Blackpool's in Lancashire, isn't it? Am I going to get my geography wrong? Where they had the quake. Shit. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, they've
biggest
had
quake.
And so fracking was very much on his mind. This would be on the minds of the people living in Lancashire because this is what she wants to do. She wants to rock up and stick in some fracking sites, which, by the way, is like if you got the Empire State Building and put it, stacked it up like 8 times, that's how big these things are. It's not great to live next door to. And this was his clip.
What does local consent look like, Prime Minister?
Well, the Energy Secretary will be laying out in more detail exactly what that looks like, but it does mean making sure there is local support for going ahead. And
it,
I can assure
it sounds
you,
like you don't
and I can
know.
assure Mark Menzies. Well, there are various detailed issues to be worked through, but I can assure Mark Menzies that I will make sure there is local consent if we are to go ahead in any particular area with fracking.
But your local MPs don't want it, all Conservative. In the past, the County Council have said they didn't want it, yet your government overturned it. The science hasn't changed. Why can't you tell us this morning there won't be a return to fracking in Lancashire?
Well, I don't accept the premise of your question.
Why?
It's certainly the case at present. Because what I've said is if there is local consent, we will go ahead. We need to explore where there is local consent and where there isn't. And we're still doing that work.
Gosh, she's absolutely crumbling in that. And she doesn't have consent. Like, she doesn't have a mandate. She doesn't have a mandate for bloody any of this. Like, none of this has been approved by bloody anyone. And they're just, like, steamrolling this shit through. And if she sounds like she doesn't know on there, which she bloody doesn't, it's because she doesn't know.
Yeah, he was great because she was like, I don't accept the premise of your question.
What does that mean? What does that mean? He is saying, you said you won't put it here if you haven't got consent and you haven't.
Oh, all right then. Anyway, lastly, John Akers on BBC Stoke. Have a listen.
It's also about how we grow the size of the pie so that everyone can benefit.
By borrowing more and putting our mortgages up.
We need to borrow more this winter for the energy crisis that we're facing. And I think that was the right thing to do.
We're going to spend more in mortgage fees under what you've done based on the predictions than we would have saved with energy.
I don't think anybody is arguing that we shouldn't have acted on energy.
God, I mean, listen, they all did sterling work, but I'm not being funny. You could put my 8-year-old nephew in and he's probably got more economic sense than Liz Truss, and he did a pee in his pants the other day.
And it's not just us laughing at the state of these interviews. At one point, Liz Truss herself actually laughed. I think she almost could hear how ludicrous she was being. At one point, during James Hansen's interview on BBC Radio Bristol, when he basically hammered her for blaming Ukraine for the reason that we're seeing these markets being completely spooked. And she was even being quite misleading about her £2,500 energy bill cap. So much so that Full Fact actually had to wade in and correct it so people weren't all thinking, actually, I'm just going to be capped at £2,500.
I have a confession. I was one of those people. I was one of those people. Yeah, I was.
You've got the heating on today.
No, because I had it dispelled by my sister about a week and a half ago. But do you know what? Given that we're supposed to be quite across all this stuff, but I read headlines that said a bill's capped at £2,500. And I heard MPs saying, we've capped your bills at £2,500. Now, I'm sorry, I am pretty good at not trusting everything that they say and reading between the lines. But I thought, oh, okay, right. So split that into 12. Now, I don't mind admitting that because, you know, I'm not saying I'm brain of Britain, but I'm not half baked. And it clearly, there's clearly so many people, and Martin Lewis described it on GMB this morning as bad comms. Now, get this, Marina, Liz Truss didn't understand it, but you know what? It's her policy. So she was on the flipping right. So it's not surprising people like me are being misled because it's her policy. So what it is, they've put a cap on the unit price of electricity, not on your bills, but they have been misleading us. So there you go. That's
See, I gave her more credit. I thought that she maybe did understand it.
No,
maybe
she
was being a little bit clever. See, I gave her more credit because I thought, is she doing this? Because then people will just do whack on the heating and they don't feel the need to ration or be careful. And what that actually ends up meaning is more money to the energy companies.
Oh, wow. So you've gone pure evil. You've gone pure evil.
Conspiracy
theory. I've just been let down by pure ineptitude.
It's one of the two.
It's always one of the... I think it's sort of a mixture of the both with this lot. And then there's old Kwasi Kwarteng. Where's he? Because he's culpable as well for this. It was a two-man operation, wasn't it? They went in together and blew up the economy without getting anything checked. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Marina Hyde, a writer for The Guardian, who was actually on Newsnight last night, she said, as for how well Kwarteng's taking it, Friday saw him rising above the bed he just shat, declaring, I don't comment on market movements. Righto. It's like... the Chancellor of the Exchequer doesn't comment on market movements. That's your job. Wow.
But he comments on other stuff as well. So what I don't understand, why do you comment on all other bits and pieces that you're asked to, if, you know, from Partygate to this, that and the other, but you won't comment on this? This is your remit. This is what you're supposed to be commenting on.
This is your mess. You've had this ideology for years and years and years. You've done it and you've been proved wrong in about 2 seconds. It's the whole world just went, ah. So, yeah, that was just disgraceful seeing him stomp down the road on BBC News, actually just not saying anything. And it's like, listen, mate, if they had a tiny bit of integrity, they would resign. But guess what, folks? They don't. So someone called Russell Warfield, who's a dad and a head of comms for We Are Possible, said... said about Kwarteng's total silence, saying, I don't comment. He said, people are sneering at this one, but I, for one, will be giving the I don't comment on the direct consequences of my actions line a go at my next annual appraisal. I think we all should, shouldn't we? And then David Badil tweeted, what is this we don't comment on market movements bollocks from Truss and Kwarteng? You caused it. It affects people, their mortgages, their cost of living, their businesses. So answer for it. I agree, David. These guys are responsible for this and they should be accountable.
Right, so on to one of the major concerns to come out of this batshit crazy budget. And this is the impact on mortgages, renters and the property market as a whole. And it's not looking good, is it, Gemma?
No, it's not really. There they are trying to stimulate growth. And actually what's happening is everybody's panicking about getting their house repossessed. Bravo. So what you've got going on here is basically a huge tussle between government and the Bank of England, who sort of have two different jobs, if you like. So the Bank of England, their absolute mandate is to maintain economic stability and keep inflation supposedly at 2%. That is their constant goal. And then you've got fiscal and economic policy, which is, you know, up to the government. And one would always hope that the government are looking at the global picture and making sure that the banks are sort of warned about what they're up to. But what they did, you know, was a total and utter shock to everybody. You know, they didn't get the budget checked out by the OBR. They avoided that one. And so the global markets reacted. And they had basically announced so much borrowing on top of exorbitant debt that suddenly, when you think a lot of that debt is wrapped up in things like pensions and everything, so suddenly it sort of becomes like, if you like, bad debt. Everybody panics and they try and sell it. But the point was, nobody wanted it. I mean, this is a very simplistic boil down of what's happened. So if you just think, they sort of, between the two of them, kicked the Bank of England in the bollocks, because it was just such an inflationary budget. So it goes completely against what they're always trying to do. So if you think, like, if you've got a Fabergé egg encrusted in jewels and it's worth £100,000, but there's only one of them. So think of that as like one of the bonds that's out there, you know, that's like British debt. But then suddenly you've got thousands of them. The market is swamped with them. So it's like worth nothing. So you've just got shitloads of UK sovereign debt available, and $500 billion were wiped off the UK markets in one effort. It's quite extraordinary. So then what happens is that the Bank of England have to just go, whoa, what are they doing? What are they doing? And what they do is they put up interest rates to sort of stop people buying and selling, to try and curb everything. That affects you directly, straight away. So Paul Johnson, former deputy editor of The Guardian, said Friday, quoting, cuts to stamp duty will get the housing market moving and support first-time buyers. Tuesday, 300 mortgage deals have been pulled by banks and building societies after fall in the pound fueled forecasts of jump in interest rates to nearly 6%. Flippin' erg. Sam Coates from Sky said an emergency intervention by the Bank of England, buying government debt itself because of a political intervention, the first of a new government that went wrong, is quite something. So I'm just, my heart bleeds when you think about, I have bought and sold properties before, and it's always like they say, it's one of the most stressful things you'll ever do, right? It's like up there with divorce and grief and all sorts. And it sort of is. It's very stressful. That day, lenders were withdrawing their offers. That day, house sales were collapsing. Think of people in chains, maybe someone who's having a baby, who's moving into a home because they want another bedroom, or someone's first flat, or someone who's finally getting that family home that they've always dreamed of. I mean, all those dreams up in smoke. Thanks very much, because of you two flipping criminal dingbats. Charky Job 33 tweeted, my kids are going to be living with me forever.
Oh gosh. My you know, we're really lucky. We're doing some work to the house. So we remortgaged to try and get some money out so we could spend it on the building work. And I love my husband for this, because he sorted us out just in time. But other people, like my NCT WhatsApp group, is going off at the moment, because two of them are up for remortgage, and they are like, what is this about? And it's massive. And we are comfortable, and they're having to make changes to their life. But a bit of context for you, right, to depict quite how grave this is. So around 3,000 households are coming out of their fixed rate mortgages every day. 3,000 households. Now, most of these were under 2% in terms of their mortgage rate. The best rate is now double that. So George Nixon from The Times tweeted, Nationwide Building Society is putting up mortgage rates from tomorrow by up to 1.2%. Its cheapest two-year fix for new borrowers will be 5.59%. And you've got people like Santander, they're pulling their 60% and 85% loan-to-value loans for new customers. That means loads of people. That's it. That's the housing ladder just firmly out of grasp now.
But this is to stimulate growth, Marina.
No, of course. Growth. Oh, yes.
So much growth. If she says growth again, honestly, there are certain phrases that they use that just sort of start to trigger me. Yeah, and growth is one of them. She is a growth. She's a growth that needs to be taken off.
And in terms of growth, by the way, so Ray Bolger, he told BBC Radio 4, so he's like a veteran mortgage broker. He said he's predicting a 10% fall in house prices, speaking of growth. Could also then lead to like a negative equity crisis. And also, this isn't just you know, people who are fortunate enough to have a mortgage. This impacts renters too. So this was pointed out by @VelvetChris, who said, and let's not forget that buy-to-let landlords will also be putting rents up if they hold a mortgage on the property. He's right, you know, cue the housing market crash. And a perfect tweet, must say, from Have I Got News For You, the Have I Got News For You account, which wrote, Kwasi Kwarteng delivers on promise to make stamp duty a thing of the past by ensuring nobody can get a mortgage.
It's just so awful. I did a tweet that went quite big yesterday, and I sort of did a weird analogy, and I thought, are people going to get what I'm talking about? Because, you know, she sort of naffed off and escaped and was just silent. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's like, imagine you're a teenager and you want to have a party in your mum's house. And your mum says no for years. She's like, no, 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 no. It'll all go wrong. And you go, yeah, yeah, it's a good idea. And then you just do it anyway. And it's a disaster. And everything's ransacked. And people are vomiting everywhere and snogging in your garden. And things are broken. And it's all awful. And your mum comes back and you're just standing there going, argh. And then you just disappear for 2 days and come back and tweet about Ukraine. That's what she's done. That is what this woman has done. I mean, and again, I like silver linings because it's very depressing, and it's very, very bleak out there. So what I will say is, it's the end of the Tory party, right? Surely.
Yeah, gosh,
I mean,
it has to be.
It's got to be, because the other thing that's happened is, you know, the middle classes, or the upper middle class, or whatever bloody class, I hate it. But the point is, those people perhaps who've always given the Conservatives their vote, like Middle England, they're waking up to their mortgages. Perhaps their mortgage deal is up, and their pensions will have been devalued. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go down well. So Guy Stallard tweeted, this is a nightmare for most of middle class. So someone with a £250,000 mortgage, bloody hell, that's a lot, currently paying 3%, would see their interest rate rise. And of course, with house prices what they are, that's probably quite standard for a lot mm-hmm. of people. See their interest rate rise to, although people who aren't in London would be like, what are you talking about? We live in London. A garage is about £1 million. A caravan is about,
and the rest,
you know, unaffordable. It's ridiculous. Mm. Anyway, see their interest rate rise to 6.5%, or simple terms, annual interest bill rise from £7,500 to £16,500. They would need to find over £700 extra a month not to lose their house. And at iDinosaur74 tweeted, when the value of your house crashes and your mortgage goes sky high, just remember the Tories did that to you because they wouldn't tax the energy companies and gave money to the top 5%. That's it. It's a nutshell. And good context here as well.
£700, sorry, a month. Like, who's got that on top of what we're doing with the energy bills? Right. So our energy bills are going up 25% in October. You know,
food's up as well.
Everything's up. How are we supposed to do this? Mm. I just don't understand. Ours would have gone up. I think it was about £1,000 extra a month. Where are we getting that from? Where are you finding it? Where are people magicking it from?
You know, I had a great chat yesterday with a sort of a friend of a friend, actually, but because I like speaking to people who are in the heart of things, especially when I'm trying to get my head around stuff. So basically, he's in finance and all of that. And he was just like, well, A, he'd come off a very noisy sort of, everything was just chaos. And he's just like, I don't know who they think this is for. Because he is a big earner. And he was like, mm-hmm. I don't want this. And he said, and they've stuffed it for like, they haven't helped the vulnerable, and they've put people into poverty, and then everybody in between as well. So who wants this? It's just, they're nutters. Nick Behane said, good gosh, what have they done? We're going to freeze your energy bill, after a 25% increase, by the way, and knock a few pence off your tax, but we're going to crash the economy and double your mortgage payments. Utterly useless. Millions will be worse off. And even Tory MPs, so many of them, and this is the gossipy bit, are shitting themselves. So Anoushka Asana, political editor at ITV, tweeted, I asked a Tory MP to let me know what was happening on the quasi-Kwarteng call, and they replied, I'm barely listening. I'm contemplating my next career while trying to fix my mortgage.
That's nice. Good. I mean, you just focus on yourself there. Yeah, you sort that out. But another thing I think is going to be misconstrued here, and my parents have done it already, and bless them, I told them they were wrong, but my parents jumped to the conclusion and said, oh, well, you know, we had to deal with interest rates of 15%, you know, in the 90s. And yeah, you did, but things were really different back then. Shark Eyes tweeted, one, your mortgage wasn't 5 to 6 times your joint earnings. Two, your wages hadn't stagnated for more than a decade. And three, 15%. Yeah, they were 15% for precisely one day before falling back down to 10%. And also, like, let's just put something in perspective, right? My mum and dad, I've spoken about them before, Sicilian immigrants came over in their, like, 20s. My dad was, like, a gardener. My mum was a, you know, he was also a waiter and a night porter. My mum was a cleaner and a dinner lady. Between the two of them, they could afford a 3-bed terraced house in Harrow, northwest London. Now, yeah. Don't think you can do that now, can you? Not on those salaries. No chance.
No.
And listen, like, the catastrophic impact of those interest rates spans wider still. So think about all this money we're borrowing, you know, to pay for, like, cinema rooms and stuff and diamond encrusted ties. high interest rates means it will cost us even more now to borrow. So, like, a shed load more. Sir Charlie Bean, he is the ex-Bank of England chief economist and former OBR economist. So, you know, he seems like he knows what he's talking about. He told Channel 4 that the rise in interest rates since Friday alone will cost the government an extra £20 billion a year.
Ugh.
Like, £20 billion. Just gone. Boof, like that. For nothing. Towards nothing.
It's so
nothing.
Much money. It's so much money that could do so much good. I'm so angry.
And Sky News' Ed Conway tweeted, if government don't reverse its fiscal plans... Oh, so this is the same scenario. So Charlie Bean said this as well, and Sky News' Ed Conway tweeted it. He said, if government doesn't reverse its fiscal plans, it may have little option but to cut public spending so enormously, it could result in the end of the NHS, which is great. Terrifying. Yeah. And think about it, actually.
Bastards.
Think about all those US, like, healthcare companies, vulture capitalists, just looking over at the UK now and just decimated, thinking, oh, I can pick all of those bits of the NHS off for cheap now. I mean, it's worked out pretty well for them, actually. And Sky also reported how government has reluctantly been pressured into explaining how they plan to stop this spiralling borrowing. Because bear in mind, they haven't, by the way. They've just put this stuff out there and there's no plan, which is why we're hearing it being called unfunded. They've agreed. They've bowed to pressure and they've said that they will in 8 weeks. Yeah, they're going to tell us in 8 weeks. You all right to wait that long? Yeah. Well, we're all just pissing our pants.
Super.
Yeah, and we're all just going, am I going to lose my house or, you know, can I afford to live, basically, to exist? So in 8 weeks, we're going to hear how they're going to do this. But Sky News have said they expect this to come from cuts in Whitehall, public services investment and probably welfare. This is a disaster, Gemma, because can you imagine a worse time to cut investment into the NHS, for example, just ahead of winter when we're going to see probably a little bit more COVID, a little bit more flu, welfare when people
there
need
isn't anything
more
to
now
cut.
Ever. No,
there isn't anything to cut. It's like a carcass with nothing left on it, and you're just going to start taking the bones, and then there's nothing left.
But
and
also, it's just go on. I was just saying that the thing about Whitehall, cuts in Whitehall, that's not going to be possible because you're talking about that bonfire of EU regs, right? That massive bonfire where they're going to sunset all those EU clauses. That comes with admin. It doesn't just end and there's nothing. That's a whole massive team of people now going, right, that has ended. We need to put in new legislation. That's not a cut in Whitehall. That requires a massive boost. It's a bloody unthought.
Maybe it'll just be
disaster.
Down to, like, Whitehall just empty and just Kwarteng and Liz sitting there. With just loads of files of EU regulations, just looking at them going, ha, 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 like rocking backwards and forwards and going, I still think it's gross.
Oh, God.
But if you want to frame all of this in a more positive way, there are absolute numpties out there who are prepared to stick up for it all. So there's, like, Lord Frost. And you know what, guys? You're expecting me to sing Lord of the Week. No, believe it or not, there's a bigger bellend coming up later on. So our Lord Frost, there was an article that he wrote and it was very pro-budget because, of course, the budget's gone beautifully well. And he said, my view on the somewhat eccentric IMF comments, and they stand for International Monetary Fund. They're the people who have intervened to go, what are you doing? Like a teacher. It's very embarrassing. My view on them, and then he drivelled on in the Telegraph about how they've consistently advocated conventional economic policies. Yeah, ones that don't bankrupt the country. And Jonathan Liss responded, why do the worst imposters never get the syndrome? And then there's Patrick Minford, isn't there? And he wrote, there's no sterling crisis except in the minds of idiots. I would flip that round, Patrick. At Brexit underscore Sham responded with a reminder that Minford was the genius economist who backed the poll tax. He also said that Brexit would result in an 8% drop in the cost of living on day one due to a 10% drop in goods prices and the leading to cheaper food and clothing and footwear. Quizimodo tweeted and captured the mood by simply saying, "Minford, now we really are fucked." It's got a point. Ah, dearie me. Right, there's an underrated tweet of the week here from parody Liz Truss. And she wrote, "If anyone is concerned about the rising cost of their mortgage, please rest assured it will be brilliant for commercial landlords when your house gets repossessed."
Oh, to be a commercial landlord, eh? But look, before we move on totally from mortgages, it's good to note that there were some right-wing gobs that actually didn't think any of this was the fault of the government. In fact, do you know whose fault it is, Gemma?
Whose fault? Is it Jeremy Corbyn? Everything's his fault, actually. Isn't it? No.
No, it's ours. It's our fault.
Oh.
Ours.
Oh.
Us.
Oh.
The people that took the mortgages out. So Aaron Banks.
God damn us.
Yeah, it's us. Aaron Banks, if you don't know him, lucky you. If you do know him, well, he is basically one of the architects of Brexit, self-labelled bad boy of Brexit, bad end of Brexit. He took to Twitter to blame us. Yes, it's our fault for borrowing too much. He tweeted, "Yeah, you borrowed too much, expecting interest rates to always be low and prices always high." And then Tom Harwood, who's like that GB News Tory boy, he also peddled a similar line. He tweeted, "If your mortgage becomes unaffordable thanks to interest rates rising to, frankly, normal levels, maybe it's time to say that supporting spiralling housing prices hasn't been the wisest move, even for homeowners." And what was pointed out here was that both Banks and Harwood have spectacularly missed the fact that what low interest rates are normal now, and they are to be expected. So at Hammer underscore Mo wrote, "They've been at this low level for nearly 15 years, Tom. But hey, Gemma, we were supposed to know that they were going to just start creeping up again all of a sudden and just like skyrocket to like 5, 6, 7%. We were supposed to know that."
Yeah. They must like literally crick their neck, sort of struggling to reach around for these incredible takes. I just don't even know how they get there. But thank you for your kind words of compassion, Tom and Aaron. And may my daughter never, ever end up with a man like you. if she bought a man like that round and was like, come and meet my mum, I'd be like, no, he's a wrong'un. It was like the bad boys / bellends of Brexit were out in force this week. Not only did you have Aaron Banks chatting shit about mortgages, you also had his pal, Andy Wigmore, wading in on the Gary Neville debacle. So for those of you who missed it, Gary Neville's very politically active. He really uses his massive platform to speak his truth. And he was at the Labour conference as well, actually, on the stage with Keir Starmer at one point. This is him talking about the the banker's bonus cap being removed.
"I feel politically motivated to speak out at this moment in time because really I don't want someone living in number 10 and 11 Downing Street when people are worried about paying their energy bills and worried about how they're going to get through a winter thinking about bankers' bonuses and thinking that they should increase. I don't think it's right. I think it's immoral. And I believe that over the last couple of years, we've seen what would be real low standards in government. And I would expect those things to change quite quickly with the change. It's a tired, failing government, this one. They've had their time. They're divided. They beat each other up in the leadership contest a few weeks ago. I know you have to be impartial on this show, but you two must be even looking."
And this is what leads us to our Lord of the Week and the world's worst take on what Gary Neville said. Lord Ashcroft, billionaire Tory peer and man of the people, tweeted, "Would footballers who are against a cap on the salaries of bankers want one for them?" I mean, what? So Tory boy Andrew Pearce, who works for the Daily Mail, chimed in. "Did Gary Neville demand a cap on footballers' salaries when he was playing for the richest club in the world?" And Dave Lawrence, Dave 43 Law, wrote, "Not very bright, Andrew. It is not a salary cap. Does a footballer bet his team's whole season on the chance of a personal gain for himself? Would you like to bet the wealth of the Daily Mail against one of your Meghan stories going viral? It would never happen."
Oh, God, there were so many of these, right? So I actually saw one of these tweets, like, making the comparison between bankers and footballers' salaries, and it got 13,000 likes. I just despair. Like, how? God. What a shit comparison. It's just pure, like, whataboutery. So I tried to, like, try and make sense of this for people. And I wrote, if footballers were paid uncapped bonuses for scoring shots fired from the halfway line, and the result was sinking the whole English Football League, which the public then had to bail out, then you have a comparison. Otherwise, you're talking bollocks. And at Stuart Hall 69 yeah. tweeted, 2008 financial crash caused by Jermaine Defoe buying a nice car.
they always just go for footballers as well. It's so lazy, isn't it?
I know. Why is that? Do you think it's because they're not, they're just not posh like them, they're not working class. They don't deserve exactly. to be rich.
Maybe they're just sort of, working class, a lot of them, great athletes. I don't know. It's just pathetic. That is that the politics of envy, perhaps?
Possibly. Adam Brooks from GB News, he also weighed in. He tweeted about Neville and Starmer. So obviously they were together at Labour conference. And he wrote, two multi-millionaires with their fingers on the pulse of the average man and woman. Adam, what is wrong with you? Like, I don't get this position. So many people have got it. It's not just Adam. Like, in your head, is there, like, is there, maybe there is one, I just don't know about it. Do you know about it, listener? Is there a level of wealth, and as soon as you reach it, you have to turn into a selfish asshole? Like, or you need to earn, once you earn, I don't know, 175K maybe, that's it. You're not allowed or expected to give a toss about anyone else. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think it is. You have to lose all empathy, all feeling, all kindness. You have to not care about the rest of society. And you have to fundamentally hope that the government implement policy that makes life really shit for people who are worse off than you. That's what you're supposed to do.
When do you get, how do you find out? Is it like an automated email, like a text?
I think so. I think what it is Chris Philp, that one who's been doing the rounds today, or Liz Truss, they come around with a pamphlet, they put a chip in your head, and they just zap out all the empathy. That's what they do. They zap out your soul. Yeah. Lovely. It's great. Okay, underrated tweet of the week time is from the Purple Pimpernel. Who said, this all feels, and this was obviously just after the fallout of the huge financial crash, self-inflicted. This all feels like the day when it became evident that Boris Johnson's premiership was over. No Tory MPs on TV or the radio, no obsequious newspaper columns, no Downing Street press conference. Just an eerie, guilty silence, broken only by the idiotic musings of Andrew Pearce.
Beautiful.
Which actually, I'm going to say, there was, funnily enough, one of Andrew Pearce's musing was he put something like how much of this crash is down to the thought of Keir Starmer being Prime Minister. And James O'Brien just quote tweeted it and just put, none of it. Next.
What a dick.
It's so embarrassing. Stop it. Stop sticking up.
I need some pudding. Give me some pudding.
Yeah. What's our pudding then? Oh, yeah. Okay. Comedian Matt Green. So he's at Matt Green Comedy. And this was beautifully tweeted with the caption, gambling with other people's money.
Are you a government with limited time to make an impact and big bills to pay, but you don't want to ask your rich friends to chip in? Do you believe that the best way to beat inflation is to give it a stern talking to? Have you always fancied trying out some of your wacky ideas on a massive scale? Then you need gambling with other people's money. Convinced that cutting taxes actually leads to more revenue, then roll those dice. Want to chuck everything on credit with an IOU that reads, in trust we trust, then deal those cards. Declare you're after a high-wage economy whilst telling everyone they can't have pay rises, what are you waiting for? Spin that wheel. Because you can't make an omelette without breaking eggs, and you can't make a profit without taking risks. And after all, it's not really a risk if it's not your money, and let's face it, those eggs were never going to vote for you anyway. But what happens if the markets spook and the pound falls? Don't worry, your mates will have shorted it. If interest rates soar and house prices crash? Chill out, dude, that's just more cheap property for your donors to buy. Won't public services crumble and crime explode? Well, you'll be fine, you're with Bupa, and you know Tai Chi. Remember, gambling is not recommended for children, charities, or the working classes. Putting your child benefit in a slot machine is irresponsible. Betting your entire economy on a theory is inspirational. Because sometimes the most impressive impacts are made by the biggest falls. But if it's not your money, it won't be you that hits the ground. That was a party political broadcast from the so-called Conservative Party. God help us all.